There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. We've got, halfway of the week already, Tim.
Oh, yes.
Wednesday. How did it go so quickly?
The older you get, the faster it goes.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Yep. I wonder if there's a medical mystery behind that. We'll have to talk to our guest about that tonight. Tomorrow night, Shell Taylor is going to talk to us about children of the paranormal. What do you do when children are dealing with the paranormal? We'll discuss that on tomorrow's show, Tim. Friday, we'll be at the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Los Angeles, which was a very strange occurrence that took place. Was it UFO? Was it secret spy planes? Was it the Russians? Was it the Japanese? I don't know, Tim. We'll talk about that. Could have been Underdog. Who knows? We'll find out more about that. Bill Burns will be our guest on Friday as we talk about the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Los Angeles. Tonight, though, Tim, you know, I'm always fascinated by this aspect. You know, my mom worked for many years as a nurse, and she worked at Loyola Medical University. She also worked at – and she worked in the NIC unit, the neonatal intensive care unit. She then went on to work for Shriners Children's Hospitals, which she loved. And she and other nurses have told me stories of strange activity taking place in the hospital. From miracles to full-on ghosts and apparitions and things like that really kind of challenge our paradigm. Because, again, it's so easy to roll your eyes when you're talking about, you know, the layman seeing a ghost, right? But when you start looking at people of science and medical practice and, you know, they've got a very logical approach to life, you can say real easily, you know what, that's kind of weird when they start taking a notice to this. Now, on the other side, my mom would tell me, you know, we also had very little sleep. We were in a high-stress position. And you know, the medical professional tell you that that can cause issues as well.
Right, yeah.
and can cause, cause you to have hallucinations, can cause you to have visions that sometimes you would not normally notice because of the heightened state that you're in or the rundown state.
Right.
But I'm always fascinated by people in the medical community or law enforcement community that are willing to come out and talk to us about this. And our guest this evening was recommended to us by our good buddy Chris Fleming, the sensitive, the medium, out of Illinois. Scott J. Kolbaba, MD, is a doctor of internal medicine in Wheaton, Illinois. And after being awarded a degree in economics from Cornell College and serving with the Marine Corps Reserve, he completed his medical degree at the University of Illinois and graduated with honors. And after a miraculous experience where he was given divine knowledge that a patient needed a lung scan, which ultimately saved his life, Kolbaba became intrigued by unexplained phenomena, which many doctors see during their professional careers. He's here. He's the author of Physicians Untold Stories, Miraculous Experiences Doctors Are Hesitant to Share with Their Patients or Anyone. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kolbaba. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
What a fascinating tale. So prior to this experience that you had, what was your mindset about things like the paranormal, ghosts, and otherworldly influence on us?
You know, I spent about 25, I've been in practice 35 years. I spent about 25 years believing that medicine is all hard science, that we experience diseases, we give pills and medicines and surgeries and so forth, and that takes care of things. But I started to have a few experiences that were really unusual. And then for some reason, and I think this is more than a coincidence, I had a few doctors come up to me and say, Scott, I've got to tell you about this amazing thing that happened to me, but don't tell anyone. And after that, after that, I started to think there's something more to this. And I got more and more stories and eventually went to a I've got doctors have everyone in their practice that has any specialty or occupation you can imagine. So I had a publisher in my practice, and I went to him and I said, I've got these stories. Let me tell you some of these stories. And we went out to lunch and I told him a few stories. And as I was eating, I didn't pay much attention to what he was doing. And then I looked up, and after about two stories, he had tears in his eyes. And I thought to myself, this is amazing that I could touch a person with these kinds of stories that I think are true, that I think have really happened to these doctors. I've known these doctors for sometimes 30 years. And that's what got me going.
All right. Well, talk to us about your experience when you feel that you were given this kind of divine knowledge. What can you tell us about the patient and your relationship with this person prior to getting this kind of awakening?
Well, the first experience I had that really woke me up was a phone call from Alabama. Taylor Johnson was my patient. He was there on work, and he called me up and said, I've got this abdominal pain, and it's right upper abdomen. I've been nauseated. It happened just after I ate, and I thought, this is classic gallbladder. So I sent him to the emergency room in Alabama, and I got a call 2 hours later from the emergency room doc, and he said, we've done every test that we can think of to do. We've done an ultrasound, blood tests. We gave him a shot of narcotic, and he's now fine, but we didn't come up with anything. The gallbladder ultrasound was normal. The tests were all normal. So I talked to Taylor afterwards, and I said, why don't you come back to Chicago? We'll do some fancier tests and find out what's going on. You know, you wonder what kind of tests they did there. And I'm thinking, they come to the Mecca and we can do all these fancy tests and diagnose them.
Right.
So a little haughty here. So he came back and he saw me in the office, and sure enough, it sounded like classic gallbladder. The pain had come back in the right upper abdomen, and he was having some troubles eating because of that. So I sent him for some fancy gallbladder tests and additional more sophisticated blood tests, and everything was perfectly normal. And I really get troubled when I can't diagnose a problem, and he was really in a lot of pain. So about 2 days later, I woke up in the morning, and I had this really strong urge to do a lung scan. Now, it didn't make any sense that he needed a lung scan because this was abdominal pain, but I couldn't get this urge out of my mind. It was just so strong and so powerful that I called him up, and I never do that. I called him up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I said, Taylor, you need a lung scan today. And he said to me, oh, it's nice, doc, but I'm leaving for Denver this afternoon. I don't have time. And so I don't know how I finally convinced him to get a lung scan, but he finally agreed. And my next step was to call the hospital to see if I can convince them to get a lung scan in the morning when they're booked up for 3 days. And finally, the radiology technician said, okay, just send him over, after I twisted his arm a couple times. About an hour and a half later, I got a call from the radiologist that read the lung scan. And he said, good call, Scott. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you probably saved this guy's life. And I said, well, why? And he said, he has a massive pulmonary embolus, a blood clot, on his diaphragm, which is why he had abdominal pain and not chest pain. I got weak-kneed and had to sit down, and I realized then that there's something else going on that was helping me with this diagnosis and this treatment. We immediately hospitalized him. We discovered that he had a hereditary clotting disorder that predisposed him to having clots. Had he flown out for Denver that afternoon, he probably would have died because he would have had another clot. So that got me thinking about things that are not what we don't learn in science or we don't learn in medical school.
Well, now, thinking about that, I mean, you are a doctor. You're an internal medicine doctor. It didn't come to mind at first, but we also know that the brain has an amazing way of working out issues in our sleep, right? I mean, a lot of experts have been, said before bed, focus on the issue at hand, and a lot of times in the morning you'll wake up with the answer. Now, could it just be that, I mean, you're good at your job, Doc. Obviously, you've been at it for many years.
Yes.
Could it be that it was just your own interior dialogue that finally worked through the problem when you relieved the stress of focusing on it and went to sleep, and your subconscious was able to go to work at what might be another possibility?
That's always a possibility. That's always a possibility that could have been, I could have been working on it at night. You're absolutely right. But what pushed me to start writing this book were a whole series of other stories that doctors came to me with that really couldn't be explained in any other way. The next one was a story from Dr. Dave Mokel, who is an orthopedic surgeon.
Let me ask one thing before we get too deep into that. With this case, he finds this blood clot. You get it taken care of. Was that it? Was that the end of the situation? He was able to be – it was resolved, and he was able to live a long, happy-go-lucky life from that point? Okay.
I still see he and his wife and his daughter, and he's living very well on a blood thinner forever because of this hereditary clotting disorder, and he's perfectly fine.
Now, would you say that – when you got this urge, was it just an overwhelming urge to do this, or did you feel that it was, I know we referred to it as kind of divine knowledge that was given to you at that moment. Do you believe that, was it a voice telling you to do this? How would you explain it to the person who had never had an experience like this? Why this was so much different than a gut instinct you would normally have?
This was an overwhelming urge that I had to do this. Otherwise, I felt there was the consequences would be life-threatening. I just couldn't deny this urge. You know, you get some little urges in your life. You know, should I turn left or turn right at this corner, or you know, things like that. But this was just so powerful that I just couldn't deny it. I can't explain anything more than it was. I just had to do this, and it didn't make a lot of sense at the time. And I don't normally do that. I don't normally do things that don't make any sense, but this one I just couldn't help.
Now, on follow-up, and you're still friends with this guy, or know him at least, is there something extraordinary that he's accomplished since that life-saving moment? You know, did he go on to create the Better Mousetrap or to cure cancer or something? You know, I mean, of that essence, why it would be so important that out of all of your patients, this one, divinely, you were given the knowledge to heal him. What do you believe was the reason that this guy got the nod?
He's an ordinary guy. He has a nice family. He has an adopted daughter from Russia that they are taking care of in a wonderful way. But no, he's nothing special. He didn't go on to become a senator. He didn't discover anything amazing. And you know, Dave, that's what I found in all these cases, in all these situations. These are people that are ordinary people. They don't have, in most cases, don't have any special quality. They didn't go on to do heroic or miraculous things. They're just ordinary people. And why they got the nod from above, I don't know. I can't explain it.
That's part of what always fascinates me about these moments when a life is saved. You know, I talked about my own experience of, I should have been dead numerous times, Doc. You know, I died on the table during a standard knee operation. I tried to commit suicide as a teenager. It didn't go so well, as you can tell. I'm still here chatting with you. I stand back and I go, so what? What's the purpose? Why am I still here? Why was this so important when a guy two blocks over was very successful in his attempts or wasn't as successful to survive the car crash that he was in? You know, I get to do a radio show and I get to talk to people and share stories from around the world. Maybe that's my forte, is to help other people experience and open up themselves. I get that. But some of the people that you hear, their lives are saved and nothing of major import comes from that existence now. As medical science, isn't that something that just perplexes you? I mean, shouldn't I have been the guy to you know, my blood transfusion saved 4,000 people or something? I mean, there should be more of an important reason than he's going to go on to host Beyond the Darkness someday. We got to keep him around.
Well, you know, Dave, I'm not sure exactly in the microcosm of each individual life that they touch others. And I, you know, they probably do some good in the world. They probably touch other individuals. You touch lots of people in a very positive way. I mean, your life is very significant. And in each individual case, I have a feeling that each individual that is saved miraculously like this goes on and touches other people's lives in wonderful ways also that we don't even understand and don't even know. You know, your question begs the real question, that is, why do bad things happen to good people? And some people are saved and some people aren't.
Right.
And there was a TED talk about this, and I've been struggling with this for a long time. Why does that happen? And the TED Talk was from a clergyman from England, and he helped me solidify my thoughts around this. And he was saying, you know, in the tsunami in Thailand, there was a church that was located on the beach. And for that, for some reason, the pastor of that church decided to have the service in the mountains that day. And they, all the whole congregation was in the mountains, and they were all saved. And hundreds of people were killed. And the clergyman said, why did this happen? Why were some people saved and other people lost? And he said, the answer is, I don't know. And I think, you know, someday we may know when we die why this happens, but I don't think we can answer that right now.
Yeah, that's the fascinating aspect of all of this, right? I mean, we look at the possibilities and probabilities of things that go on, and the ideas that miracles, if that's what you want to call them, whether divine intervention or from within. And I think people dismiss that a miracle always has to have some kind of theological background to it, when sometimes the miracle is just our own ability that when given the opportunity, we can heal ourselves. We can spontaneously have a moment that of clarity, like you had, of healing, like some people go through, that just defies what science would have us believe. When you look at things like that, do you ever question, I wonder if we really have this right, the whole idea of life and death and science yet?
You know, I don't think the point of my book and the point of I think the whole series of stories that I have is that there is some spirituality in medicine, mm-hmm. that medicine is not all pills and surgeries. There's something else out there. And I think doctors are realizing that more and more. And I'm hoping that people will also realize that prayer, that love, that hope, that optimism makes a huge difference. And I think we're learning that more and more. There are studies of people praying for people in the ICU, and they don't even know they're praying who they're praying for, but they're praying for these individuals, and they get better quicker, and all kinds of things where people are optimistic when they have cancer. They do better than people that are not optimistic. So there's a whole part of medicine. I call it the spirituality of medicine that we don't understand, and I think I'd like to get that out so people have some hope that if they're facing tough situations, that they can sometimes direct their own future and heal themselves. And it really happens. I've seen it. I've felt it.
All right, let's continue talking about some of the cases that you cover in the book, or that you've collected, whether they made it in the book or not. We're fascinated to hear these stories.
There's a number of stories. Let me tell one about one of my friends that did some missionary work in the Philippines. His name is Hussey, Mike Hussey. He actually delivered one of our kids. He's a gynecologist. And he's what I call a sappy do-gooder. Most of the doctors in the book ended up being called sappy do-gooders, and I'm probably a card-carrying member of that organization also. And he liked to go to the Philippines and do surgeries on some of the women there that couldn't afford to have surgery at all. And they would wait for a whole year for this crowd of doctors to come and do their surgeries. And he had one lady that had a large fibroid uterus, which is a tangle of blood and mostly muscle in the uterus, and it made her look like she was pregnant. She was having a lot of pain associated with this, and he started to operate on her. And when he got in there, he realized that there was so much scar tissue that he couldn't get underneath the uterus. Normally, what they do is they lift the uterus up and tie off the blood vessels to keep the woman from bleeding. But there was so much scar tissue, he couldn't get underneath the uterus to lift it up and stop the bleeding. So as he's doing the surgery, there's more and more bleeding, and pretty soon he couldn't keep up with the bleeding, and he knew that he was in trouble. And all of a sudden, in this poor operating room of an 8-bed hospital, 25 miles from the nearest blood bank, and off in the boonies of the Philippines, he realized that she was dying, and he was trying to calculate in his mind how long it would take for her to literally bleed to death. And so all of a sudden in the operating room, everyone becomes quiet, and it's a eerie silence. You know, normally there's lots of chatter in the operating room. And so he knows he's in trouble. No one makes eye contact, and he looks down, and there's more and more blood coming out. The poor patient's getting more and more pale. And so he closes his eyes and said a prayer, Heavenly Father, this is your patient. You're the master healer. Please take over and help her. And he opens his eyes, and you know he's a little stunned initially because of the bright light of the operating room. And he reaches down, and all of a sudden he realizes something amazing has happened, that the scar tissue has melted away, that he's able to lift the uterus up, tie off the blood vessels, stop the bleeding, and finish the operation successfully. The woman lived. She was a little pale, a little anemic from the blood loss, but she survived the surgery, and she went on to live a normal, happy life.
The scar tissue just dissolved.
There was something that allowed him to lift the uterus up and then get to those blood vessels. And there was this scar tissue that was there before, and it must not have been there after this little prayer. So that was, to him, that was just totally divine intervention to save this girl's life.
That, my mom, unfortunately, who we lost this last November to cancer, was about 20, maybe even 30 years ago. She had developed this large mole on her back, and it just seemed to keep growing. And, originally when she noticed it, it was relatively small, and then it was up to about a dime and then about a nickel in size within a month or two. And as you know, that's usually not a good sign.
Right.
You've got this weird shaped mole that's continuing to grow on your back. And Mom had a penchant for, positivity, but also, as you know, being a person involved in the medical field, not always the best at taking care of herself.
Right.
Doctors and nurses seem to be the worst patients, and that's not just a joke. That's a reality.
And that is a reality.
She was all prepped up. They had taken a look at it. They wanted to have her back in. They were going to biopsy it and go after it, and that really had her worried. And then one morning she woke up and was laying there, and she felt something hard on her back, and she rolled over, and there was this little hard raisin laying on the bed. And she's like, well, what the hell is that? And then at first she thought maybe it was a mouse turd or something. And she, she's like, oh, great. Do we have mice in the house? Am I laying on this? And she looks in the mirror and the mole is completely gone off her back. There's no scar. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. But this mole that the doctors had examined on a few occasions was gone. I mean, do moles just, they're there one minute and all of a sudden gone the next without leaving any kind of marking that they ever existed?
That can happen. There's a number of explanations for that. One is that the body can, form antibodies against the mole suddenly and destroy it. That happens with melanomas and skin cancers in some cases. The other possibility is that she had what's called a seborrheic keratosis, which is a benign spot that looks like a crusty mole. Then that can fall off. But that usually comes back when it falls off. The top will fall off. So I think something happened to her that that was amazing.
Are you familiar with, and I'm probably going to butcher it because it's been a long time since I've heard it, but esophageal Barrett's?
Barrett's esophagus, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me what that is?
That's a pre-malignant condition that's usually caused from reflux of acid into the esophagus, and it causes some burning of the esophagus. And eventually the esophagus becomes irritated because of all this acid contact and forms cells that are pre-malignant cells. And it's a serious condition. We usually watch people very carefully and treat them aggressively with medicines that will reduce the acid in the stomach.
Right. And you said these are pre-malignant cells, so there's a fairly good chance that can flip to cancer, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
And do Barrett's heal over time?
They can if they're aggressively treated. We sometimes will use some laser or other treatments to laser those cells too. But if you treat it aggressively with proton pump inhibitors like Prilosec and Prevacid and those kinds of drugs, it can heal itself. But it may take a long time.
The reason I brought that up is I told you there were numerous occasions where I've beaten the system. I shouldn't be here, right? I had GERD since I was a child. I used to chug my Lanta by the gallon when I was a kid and a teenager. My my friend's mom worked at a doctor's office, so she'd get all these free samples of my Lanta. I'd literally go through a case of them in a month, these little shots, if you were, of my Lanta, because I had such bad heartburn. And, growing up, they're like, oh, you probably have this. You'll need to get it looked at. And I eventually went in as an adult. They did a scope, an endoscopy, and found that I had this Barrett's, esophageal Barrett's. And they did a Nissen fundoplication on me from my stomach to cinch it and create the new valve at the top. And that's when the doctor said, well, you know, I've got good news and bad news. We're able to take care of the stomach issue, and this should reduce the acid. But, you know, you're going to have to come in every year to be checked up on, because this Barrett's is precancerous. And, you know, if we don't keep tabs on this, this can go bad on us real quick. And survival rate, although happens, is very rare. And, you know, there's things we can do, but it's not a pleasant experience is what they got to.
That's true.
And we went in. I had to go in for this check every couple of years. And all of a sudden, the 1 year I went in, and the physician talked to me after the endoscopy, and he said, I don't think you need to come see me anymore. And I said, why is that? And he goes, there is absolutely no sign that you ever had Barrett's. And I said,
That's amazing.
I said, what do you mean? I thought you said this doesn't ever go away. It's always going to be scar tissue that's there. But it'll, as long as we don't continue to let the acid erode at it and, you know, create this problem, we should be safe. He goes, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work. I don't need to see you again. And I said, well, should I get a second opinion? He goes, you can. And I went back for another endoscopy a while later, and the doctor told me the same thing. There's no reason for you to be here. You have nothing there.
And that is unusual and amazing.
Yeah,
you're right.
That was after 3 or 4 years of this. And all I was being treated with was over-the-counter Prilosec, I think it was, or one of those deals. Now, I'm still on it as a regimen just to make sure that the heartburn stays back. But, I've gone in for follow-up endoscopies over the years just as a let's take a quick look and make sure you're still looking good. And there's no sign of it. So, you know, I didn't know. Is that a real sign that something miraculous occurred? Or, you know.
That's one of those questionable ones. That can go either way. That could be a divine intervention, or it could just be that you healed because of the Prilosec and the time and the Nissen fundal application. So that's a hard one to say. And you know, that's true for some of these stories that people experience. You know, is it, as you mentioned earlier, is it really a divine intervention, or is it something that just would happen normally? But, you know, there are many, many stories, though, that people experience that really are unexplained and just give you goosebumps and are truly something from above.
Did you hear this, Tim? Dr. Kolbaba just dismisses my mom's miracle and mine. I'm not special, but he's got good stories in his book, Tim. I bet if I was in his book, it'd be a damn miracle. No, I'm with you. I know that's part of the thing. You want to keep perspective, and I'm curious. I want miracles, and like I said, I've seen this stuff. Although, Tim, I've got to tell you, knowing that the show was coming up and kind of chatting, I got a funny letter from one of our listeners.
Oh, yeah?
And she said, I don't know if you buy into conspiracies, Dave, but did you ever see the movie Unbreakable with Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. She goes, I wouldn't be too sure if eventually you and Tim end up bitter enemies. And I said, why is that? And she goes, the more I hear about all the crap you've survived and watching Tim going through all the physical issues he's going through, I think he's become Mr. Glass. You're kind of the Bruce Willis character in this deal. He's going to start getting bitter that you keep missing the bullet on all of this stuff. So obviously, I've got a big, Tim, set forth an intention, son. Set forth that you've got to save the world eventually, and all this medical condition crap will go away. Look at me. Perfect specimen of a fat, bald guy, Tim.
I keep setting forth the intention that none of this is ever going to happen again, and it comes back in spades.
Deflect it on somebody else. That's the way to do it.
I don't know. Maybe there's an answer for that.
Just lucky. You talked about the fact that, you know, in prayer situations, Dr. Kolbaba, that people don't even realize that they're being prayed for and a healing takes place. Part of it, as you said, is the positivity. But there are people that are very negative about their situation, but they don't understand that there are people working behind the scenes for them. And
that's true.
And this miracle occurs. What do we look at in science when we talk about this kind of situation? Is that something science has ever taken a look at? It? When you go to be a doctor, do they ever talk about the power of positivity as a doctor, of the placebo effect, of having people believe they're being prayed for? You know, how does all that work when it comes to the spirituality of medicine?
Yeah, you know, in medical school, we rarely talk about those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There is some lecture and so forth about optimism and how people that are optimistic seem to do better than people that are pessimistic. But very little is said about spirituality and how things can sometimes happen that you simply can't explain. And that's what I'm hoping to get across to the medical community, that, you know, these things happen and that it's okay to talk to patients about this, to other physicians. When I started talking with doctors, these are things that doctors just don't talk about ever. it's unusual. We talk about certain potassium levels and heart attacks and who was admitted to the hospital, but not these these stories of spirituality. And I think there's more and more coming out about how there are things that you can't explain scientifically, that there's just no explanation. And you have to say there's something else up there. There's a higher power that looks after us and loves us and helps us unconditionally in many cases.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll hear more stories of supernatural and miracles in physicians' worlds. Physicians' untold stories, miraculous experiences doctors are hesitant to share with their patients or anyone. Dr. Scott Kolbaba is our guest this evening. We'll take a quick break, and then me and Mr. Glass over here will be right back on Beyond the Darkness. And we're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio, Beyond the Darkness. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Children of the Paranormal. And Friday, we'll celebrate the 75th anniversary of the Battle of L.A., War of the Worlds style, Tim. Aliens is invading, son.
They are?
Well, they did back
now?
Back 75 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. So I do not really need to sound the alarm at this point, I don't guess.
Probably
not. Plus, we have an amazing theater of the mind from an actual eyewitness that saw what was in the skies over Los Angeles.
Whoa.
Yeah. Digging back 75 years in memories. We are going deep, 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 son, into the archives.
I'll say.
Or the Darkives, as we like to call them here. Dr. Scott Kolbaba is our guest and has probably one of the coolest names I've ever had a chance to say, Tim. It's very lyrical.
It is.
So he's back with us. He's the author of Physicians, Untold Stories, Miraculous Experiences. Doctors are hesitant to share with their patients or anyone. Why would you be hesitant to share these cool stories with your patients?
You know, these are ordinary doctors, Dave. They practice all different specialties. And when you have a miraculous story, you see a vision, you have a dream about a patient, I think if that got around generally and patients found out that you were having dreams and visions and so forth, they'd say, this is a strange doctor. I'm going to avoid seeing him, which is why I had initially some trouble getting some stories from the docs, because they were afraid to have anyone learn about this. But after a while, so many doctors came forward that they all seemed to realize that, you know, if I have half the doctors and the medical staff with these stories, it's probably okay to tell their story, and they did. And I think the other reason is that, again, they're probably all sappy do-gooders. They want to do some good in the world. They want to give people some hope, a belief system, and they want people to realize there's something higher than us, and that medicine sometimes healing takes place without medicines. And I think that was the overwhelming hope, that people would have hope from reading these stories. And it's come true. And the doctors are delighted. There's been no backlash or repercussion. And the whole medical community and the lay community has embraced this, and they love it.
When the doctors come forward to talk to you, do they ask to remain anonymous, or have they been pretty forthcoming with letting you say who they are?
Everyone came forward and allowed me to list their name, except for one doctor who had this. The story was about this doctor who had a stroke, and he didn't want people to know he had a stroke. It's interesting, though, when we had our book launch, there were so many people there, and the doctors were getting so much recognition and notoriety that he came forward and said, I'd like to be included. Don't make me anonymous anymore. So everyone in the book is now named. And it's gratifying that there was no backlash or repercussion at all from telling these amazing stories.
All right. When you're collecting these stories and doctors are coming forward to share these bits with you, do you ever hear a story kind of like I've shared with you tonight, a few ideas, where after they tell you, you're kind of like, well, come on, that's not really a miracle. That's this. This has been known to happen. Have you ever had to confront them about these deals, or do you just accept the story as it is and let it be?
You know, I've had lots of stories. The stories that I included in the book are ones that gave me goosebumps or made me tear up. They were so amazing and miraculous. I heard lots and lots of stories, Dave, as you can imagine. And I didn't include all the stories in the book. I included about 30 stories that were just the most amazing stories that really couldn't be explained by anything else than just divine intervention or something that we just can't explain scientifically.
All right, let's talk about some more of your favorite stories that you put into this book. And I know we're going to get listeners that are going to hit us up afterwards, and that we have doctors and nurses around the world that listen to the show. Is there a way they can write to you and share their experiences as well?
Yes. I'd love to have doctors and nurses write to me. Physiciansuntoldstories.com is our website. They can log onto the website and then indicate that they have a story, or they can write their story there. We're working on a couple other books, one for nurses and a second one for physicians. It's been extremely well accepted. So if doctors and nurses are listening, they can log on to physiciansuntoldstories.com and share some of their amazing stories, because there are some amazing stories. And you're right, Dave, like your mom mentioned, there nurses have some incredible stories also, in addition to physicians having those stories.
There was a story that broke a year or two ago. We talked about it on our news segment here, Dr. Kolbaba, about the physician who worked on a patient for quite a while, lost the patient, walked away, and like 20 minutes later, after they'd already called this patient, he just kept getting, or maybe it was a she, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they kept getting this kind of feel, go back and try one more time. And no, that's stupid. No, they're gone. And like 5 minutes later, got hit with that wave again. Go back and try one more time. So the physician went back into the room after they called it. The nurses were kind of frustrated. He started CPR again, prayed over this, and this patient came back to life fully unaffected after it was like 20 or 25 minutes after having been called dead. When you hear stories like that, I mean, how does that just blow you away, especially knowing how the body works and how that should not be possible?
It shouldn't be possible, but it is possible. I've heard those stories from our ER docs here in our local little hospital, that the same kind of story. And it happens. And that feeling that you get, like I had when I decided to do the lung scan, you get that overwhelming feeling that you simply cannot deny, and you have to do something. And that's why those doctors went back. And I think that's nothing more than God or the power that's above us intervening in that person's life and literally saving that person. I can't explain it any other way in some of those cases. It's divine intervention.
All right, let's hear some more of those stories.
Well, I've got there's an orthopedic surgeon who is also a trauma surgeon. He does back surgery. And he tells me a story. This is one of my first stories that really got me interested in writing this book. And we had a breakfast, and he said, I've just had something happen to me in Colorado that I have to tell someone, but don't tell anyone else. And so I said, sure, I'm happy to do that for a while. He was skiing in Colorado with his wife and his wife's sister. They got to the top of a mountain they weren't familiar with. A blizzard hit. The temperature dropped 40 degrees. The snow was coming down sideways and upside down and everything. The wind was blowing, and they had to ski down. So they could hardly see anything in front of them, but they started to ski down the mountain. They came to a patch of trees in the middle of the path, and they had to go to the right or the left. And Dr. Heim, the surgeon, went to the right, and the girls evidently went to the left, and he didn't realize that for a couple seconds. And by the time he realized that, he decided to ski through the trees to get back to the other side to meet up with the girls. While he was skiing through the trees in 5 feet of powder snow, and he's an expert skier, it was not a problem for him to do this at all, he suddenly felt this overwhelming sense that something dreadful was happening, that he was going to be called upon to do a life and death mission. And all of a sudden, there was a silence. The snow was coming down, the wind was blowing, but around him it was just silent. And it was an eerie feeling, he said. He couldn't explain it, and he just stopped skiing. He didn't know why he stopped skiing. He just stopped skiing. He took off his skis. He sunk down into the 5 feet of powder snow, took his skis off, and then started to walk in the opposite direction from where he was supposed to be walking to meet with the girls. He was walking up the mountain. He was walking and climbing and walking and climbing. He had no idea why he was doing this. until he came to a big pine tree. And when you have a big pine tree, there's a thing called the tree well, where the snow comes down to the base of the tree, and it's very shallow there at the base of the tree, then it goes up to the sides where there was 5 feet of snow. And when he looked down, he realized why he was there. There was a body underneath the tree, covered with snow. He couldn't have seen the body unless he was right on top of the tree. He's a trauma surgeon. What better person to find a body than a trauma surgeon? So he knew exactly what to do. He brushed off the snow off his face to see if he was alive or not. He didn't look like he was alive. Steve thought he was dead. He had a gray face, didn't look like he was breathing, but he knew what to do. He reached down to feel his carotid artery, and he had a pulse, so he knew he was alive. He then brushed the snow off the skier, covered him with his jacket, started yelling for help, help. And one of the last skiers down the mountain heard his cry for help, came to his side and said, "What can I do?" Steve said, "Go down to the nearest phone and call the ski patrol." About a half hour later, the ski patrol comes up with a snowmobile, a gurney, loads this unconscious, hypothermic, shocky skier onto the gurney that Dr. Heim had already splinted a broken leg with a tree branch and some of his underclothes, and took him off to the waiting ambulance at the lodge, then took him off to the hospital. Steve then met up with the girls, finally skied down, and they were still waiting, surprisingly. Skied down to the lodge. He got his reward there, a cup of hot chocolate. The next day, he called the hospital and said, "You know, what happened to this guy?" And they said, "He's awake, he's alive, he's doing great. You did a phenomenal job splinting his broken leg. The orthopedic surgeons were very impressed with your splinting in the field, and he's doing fine." And Steve said, "Well, you know, is this a senator? Is this, like you asked me before, is this a congressman? Is this an important person, a leader of a church? You know, who is this person?" And they said, "He's just an ordinary person. He has a plumbing business in one of the local Colorado towns, and he's not anyone that you would consider a VIP or a special person, although he, again, probably was special in his own circle of friends and circle of family." So the conclusion that Dr. Heim came to is there's something else up there that helps us in situations. We can't explain it, but this was truly divine intervention that led him to that very spot where the skier wouldn't have been found until the snow melted in the springtime.
Wow. That's astounding.
It is.
Does that make you want to look at science more about how we're connected and realizing that maybe this is around us at all times? What is it that opens us up to it and we're more susceptible to it this time than we were last time? Because I would think, being a man of medicine and science, that would drive you crazy not having those answers.
Yeah, we don't have the answers. I think, you know, I can justify the answers in saying that there's a force, there's a God that helps us, that directs us, that gives people hope, and you know, some people are more susceptible to these kinds of occurrences than others. I think if people believe that there's something else up there, they are more likely to have some of these experiences. But there are some amazing experiences that happen to people that you just, like this one, you just can't explain this. You know, why he would walk and find this individual. That's, you know, I mean, there's no question, there's no scientific explanation for this at all. And there are lots of stories like that in the book that, you know, you just have to say there's something else out there. And the doctors are realizing that and finally, for the first time, talking about it. And that's why I say these are miraculous experiences physicians are hesitant to share with others, because they were initially afraid of the repercussion. But I think they're coming forward more and more now, which is great. So people can talk to doctors about spirituality and spiritual things where, you know, they haven't been able to in the past.
If a patient came to you and said, "Dr. Kolbaba, I'm putting my life in your hands. We're going in to do this. I would like you to pray over me before the surgery or before this diagnosis. Pray with me." Would you do that now that you've been opened up this way? Or do you believe that that's something that they should handle on their own?
I think it's wonderful that patients would recognize there's some spirituality in medicine more than just hard science. And I love to do that. And people now are coming forward and asking for those kinds of things more than they did in the past. And I think it helps. I think it makes a difference.
All right. Fascinating stuff. Let's hear a couple more of the stories. I know time's running out on us here, but I'd like to know a couple more of your favorites. And have you had any stories? Maybe we'll do this. Have you had any stories that came to you that you didn't have time to put in this book?
Yeah, there was one involving my nurse that I just learned about a couple days ago. It was a fascinating story. my nurse left the practice because she was moving, got married, and was moving to Nashville. And so she left our practice, and we missed her. She was a wonderful nurse, absolutely wonderful. And she was in Nashville for about a year, and then decided that for some reason with the family situation, she had to move back to the area and was looking for a job. Well, we didn't have a job available at the time. And so she was looking at another job that she hated. She had this job before and hated the job, but she couldn't find another job. And that this particular morning, about 7 o'clock, she had a phone interview with the individual that was offering the job. Doctors and medical people, you know, have early morning meetings in many cases. And she was driving back home in Nashville when she started to tear up, and she couldn't drive any further because she was crying so much because she had to take this terrible job. And she knew when she got home, she'd have to call this individual and say, yeah, I'll take the job, because she was moving in a week and had to have a job when she moved up here. She was supporting her four children. So she pulled off the road, started to cry, and then she started to pray. And she was praying that she would... I get a little emotional when I tell the story, actually. She was praying that someone would give her a job that she loved. About that time, I was sitting at my desk in my office doing some paperwork, and I thought to myself, I better call Chrissy, because I wonder if I don't call her, she might take another job, and I better call her, because we had just opened up a job. I decided to take an additional nurse. We just opened up a job here in the office. So I called her while she was praying. I said, Chrissy, I understand you're moving back. Would you like a job? She said, you're an answer to a prayer. Aww. And she took the job. She was thrilled. And I just can't explain that whole sequence. And I just found out about it. Chrissy was too humble to tell me the story. One of my patients had to tell me the story. And it's an amazing story. That's not in the book.
That is. That's awesome. Yeah, when things just come together, right, and you feel this. And, you know, I joked around about the Mr. Glass thing and Unbreakable with Tim earlier. But, Tim, you've even had these experiences. I mean, we both have, right? I mean, my son was born almost 3 months premature.
Wow.
And his mother was preeclampsia and was, I think, liver functions were shutting down, all of this. And it all came together at like 1 minute. I was out in Canada at an event, and when she was put into the hospital, and at first they're like, no, she should be fine till you get back, and we'll induce labor and blah, 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 if she's not doing better. And they started, my mom out of the blue said, you know what, have them start administering this steroid right away, because that'll help the development of the lungs for the baby. And the doctors went ahead and started doing that. So it was on a whim before they even realized the danger she was in. And I got into town. They had just given her some medicine to calm her down and everything like that. And I almost want to say it was like an epidural, but it wasn't. It was something like that, though, that they wouldn't normally have given her. And then they got some readings back, and they realized how bad both of them were. And the doctor came to me and said, here's our situation. If we don't take this baby out now, I think we're going to lose both of them.
Wow.
There's a good chance we're going to lose your son, but Sonia should survive this, we hope. And I was left with this horrible decision. She's going to be really upset but they were saying if I leave this baby in there, she's definitely going to die. You know, they needed permission to move forward on this, and I knew what Sonia would want is get the baby out and save this baby. And so we went ahead and did that, and they did an emergency C-section, popped the baby out. And within, I don't know, 15 minutes after the baby was born, they had to hurry the baby off to go do whatever magic and black magic and voodoo they have to do to get a baby like that stabilized. They were having trouble with Sonia on the table. And I just went and posted to our social media pages asking for prayers and healing. And they had told us, this is going to be a long row. Your child's almost 3 months premature. So what we usually say, the rule of thumb is, the kid's going to be here for 3 months, and then it's usually another 3 months after that, depending on how premature they are. It's usually however long, and then multiply that by two for how long they're going to stay in the hospital, because your kid has got to be able to maintain their own body heat, has to be able to suck and be able to sustain food. And we threw out that prayer and healing request. She rebounded immediately, and we brought home our son 2 weeks after he was born. 2 weeks. After
That's
he was
amazing.
Born, 3 months premature, when they were expecting this baby to be in there for at least 6 months. We were home in 2 weeks after he was born, because he and the doctors were dumbfounded by it. So I firmly believe in the power of prayer. But Tim, even for you, you've had some issues.
Where I've had a lot of issues, yeah.
Where things turned around pretty quick. I mean, you almost lost your foot a couple times.
I have. I've almost lost this this same Charcot foot that I have, this right Charcot foot. I, gosh, you know, it was 10 years ago now, I believe. We were in between KLBB and
K-Talk.
And K-Talk, I had gone to a retirement ceremony for a colleague of mine over at Minnesota Public Radio. I had actually gotten blood blisters on the bottom of the foot before it was a Charcot foot. Both blood blisters had popped. I had gotten an infection in the foot, and it had raced quickly up my leg. Now, Dr. Kolbaba, I can be more stubborn than any doctor or nurse ever, because I sat and edited podcasts until I saw my leg go purple all the way up to underneath my knee, and then decided to go to the hospital because I had to get the show out first.
You sound like one of my typical doctor patients, Tim. They're probably almost as bad as you.
and then race to the hospital. Well, this was on a Friday night, Saturday morning, and I checked myself in, and they of course sped me through the emergency room, got me on an IV antibiotic, and as I'm laying there in a hospital bed, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I see the head of infectious diseases, which I don't think you normally see the head of infectious diseases at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't think that's normally.
Not usually, no.
And he comes in and takes a good hard look at my leg and says, you know, we've done a culture on your foot. And if it comes back as MRSA, you're going to lose your leg right below the knee. Well, it's not like I can call Dave at 2 a.m. and say, hey, buddy, can you get up? I need to talk to somebody. It's not like I can call my family at 2 a.m. and say, hey, can somebody get up and talk me through this? And it was rough. That was the roughest 7 days I think I've had in the hospital. And luckily, it wasn't MRSA. I don't think I've ever prayed that hard in my life. It was staff, but that I came close that time. I came close another time on that same foot. I had a hammer toe that I had to have surgery on. That the top had an open sore; it was infected. My podiatrist at the time told me be prepared. I was waiting for insurance to come through at the time. And they had me on Levaquin for 6 months, Dr. Kolbaba. Now, I want you to imagine being on Levaquin for 6 months. You can appreciate that.
I can. That's a pretty risky drug, too, these days.
That is. That's a risky antibiotic. In fact, we were in Ohio. We were at doing the Mansfield. And I ran into a drug rep in an elevator who had asked me, have you had your children yet? And I had been on it for 4 or 5 months at the time. And I said, well, no. And he goes, well, I don't think you ever will after being on Levaquin for that long. And so the podiatrist said to me, there's a good chance you're probably going to lose your toe. And at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to lose this toe. I'm just not going to lose it. It's not an option. And you know, I think that you've pointed it out earlier in the program, not only optimism, but again, the power of prayer, it really does get you through.
Right. And we had posted that people from all over were praying and sending positive energy. And Tim rebounded from that relatively quickly after that.
And, you know, I was just in the hospital recently, again, for an infected foot. The Charcot foot got infected yet again. I was sent home with a PICC line and have been on an IV antibiotic since. And the foot has come, it's come back nicely. So, and again, it was one of those things where people were out there in droves praying for me and sending that energy. And I'm coming back again nicely from that. So, and I do appreciate every single person who's put that energy forward. And it is that combination of keeping a positive attitude and having those people in your corner.
I have a quick story about the chairman of the board of Wheaton College, which is a local Christian college. I think you probably recognize that name, Dave.
Right, yeah.
It's one of the prominent colleges in our area. And as a teenager, when he was in high school, he was kicked in the flank by a soccer player that they were playing soccer and accidentally kicked and ruptured his kidney. He was put in the hospital right away, severe pain, blood in the urine. He got so bad that they decided to take his kidney out. And he was in so much pain he couldn't even watch TV, so he just laid in bed and watched the clock. And this particular event happened on Tuesday. On Friday, he was watching the clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, the pain disappeared. He got up. He moved around. He was a little hesitant to even move because he was afraid the pain would come back. No blood in the urine. They sent him home the next day. He recovered at home for another week, then went back to school. And when he saw one of his favorite teachers, the teacher said, you know, we were really, really worried about you when we heard you were going to lose your kidney. We had a faculty prayer at passing hour, and passing hour is 10 o'clock on Friday. And that's when he got the pain disappeared.
That's a bad time, though, calling it passing hour. That's...
Yes, we don't use that in medicine, that word passing.
No. Well, that reminds me, boy, all these tragic stories. I remember I got this really wicked paper cut once. Boy, I had to nap for an hour. Tim hates me. You talk about these medical mysteries. You talk about the deals. And we've talked over the years on Darkness Radio, our show for 11 years, about all the strange medical maladies Tim and I have lived through. I had a non-heart attack heart attack 4 years ago, 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
And a blood clot just slipped through an undetected PFO in my heart.
Oh, boy.
Ended up in and I just had a doctor explain this to me, Dr. Stark, of all people, right?
Yeah.
Tony Stark and Iron Man. But this Dr. Stark, he goes, I just want you to realize this. And he showed up the little rubber heart that he had in his office. And he goes, when your blood pumps in, your heart blows out blood in two directions. And he goes, and the chance for this blood clot to slip in and go into this little vein that, you know, allowed us to save your life. He goes, this should have shot like a rocket to your brain and should have been a widowmaker. Right. This should have done you in. He said,
does.
Instead, you woke up in discomfort, didn't feel well, drove yourself into the hospital, had a good day, did this. And there was a lot of little, again, that's why I said, I don't understand this reason that I'm still alive, because the doctor should have come to release me a half an hour before he did. And I had been presenting every possible deal of heart attack for forever in the hospital that day. And he said, I got to be honest with you, Dave, when he came in to talk to me, he goes, I got to be honest with you. We usually do this stick three times. And he goes, I did it six times today. That's where they draw the gas, I guess, to see, because when you have a heart attack, you get this blood gas and it'll tell you. He goes, everything you're telling me sounds like a heart attack. But the EKG is clear. The sticks are clear. I kept you a little longer than I should have. I should have been in here a half an hour ago, but I'm going to let you go now because you're not having a heart attack. And then I turned and I looked at the doctor and opened my mouth and drool just started pouring out of my mouth. And I said, I feel like I just bit into a really ripe melon and my jaw's killing me. And the doctor shook his head and looked at the nurse and put his hand on my chest and leaned me back in my bed. And he goes, get him into ICU. He's having a heart attack. So had he released me half an hour earlier, the doctor said you wouldn't be here. But then Dr. Stark showed me just the possibilities. He goes, you had two ways for this thing to pump. 99.9% of the time, it should have pumped straight up to your brain and done you in. He goes, right. This thing pumped into your heart and held it in this little artery that wasn't as important. And he goes, we went in there with a vacuum, sucked up the blood clot. You have no heart scar tissue. You have nothing. And for being a 45-year-old overweight guy, I expected it to look really bad in there. And he goes, and you probably have the heart of a 30-year-old at this point. He goes, so somebody's watching out for you. And I just, you know, it's weird things like that. You just think, boy, that could have gone one way or the other horribly wrong. And then that, you know, that brings the power of prayer. And I know I had family and friends and I had posted it online what I was going through and people were throwing all this energy out. But then when you talk about the power of prayer, you think of things like Polyclass and what is the other gal's name? The one girl that was found, Tim, do you remember she was found in the tent after all that, she had been kept captive for so long.
Yeah.
And I can't recall her name, but when they finally found her, they were standing up there on the dais kind of talking during this newscast, and next to him is next to the father is the father of Polyclass. Right. And they said something along the lines of, he goes, well, I we've been praying for this for years, and it's a miracle. And Polyclas's dad, I guess, said something along the lines of, I guess your prayers are just better than mine, because his daughter was not found alive. And it does. It begs the question then, why do prayers, why are they so effective in one case and completely ineffective in others? How does this work? It's such a mystery on why this happens the way it does. And I think that's what confuses people when you look into the idea of miracles.
Yes. I mean, and you know, we have no explanation for that. I don't think anyone has an explanation for that. And that's where this TED Talk was so interesting, because the clergyman that gave the talk said, this is, we just don't know. That's the answer. We don't know why some things are effective and some things aren't, and why there are miracles for some people and not for others. But I think if we really believe that there's something else out there, and pray or meditate or whatever it is that you do for the being that you believe in, I think things happen that are strange and wonderful and amazing, and just as you mentioned in your life, both of your lives.
Do you ever see full reversals of a medical condition that shouldn't happen because somebody is praying and doing something like that?
Sure. There's a story in my book about Barbara Kaminsky, who lived in Wheaton a number of years ago, and she had progressive MS and was getting worse and worse. She ended up with a collapsed lung. She couldn't walk anymore. She had a tracheostomy tube in so she could breathe. They put her in hospice, which usually when we put a person in hospice, we certify that they're going to live only 6 months or less. Her minister saw her, Minister Bailey is his name, and thought that he wouldn't see her alive again. And they had a radio show, and it was a local radio show in Chicago, where they tell stories about these particular people and solicit the listeners to pray for these people. And on one particular Sunday, her aunt came by to visit her with a whole bag of letters for people that had been praying for her. She put the bag down, and they started talking a little bit, and all of a sudden, Barbara hears this voice that no one else heard in the room, and it said, "Get up and walk." So she knew immediately that she said, "This is the voice of God." She announced it to the people in the room. She stood up. She took the braces off. She walked into the other room. She started to dance, do ballet. The parents came in. They were crying and incredibly excited. That evening, she decided to go to church because she could walk, and she didn't have any clothes because she'd been so sick for so long. She didn't have a dress to wear. She had to borrow a neighbor's dress, and so she was late for work. And the minister was giving the sermon that day, and when she walked into the church, he stopped speaking. He couldn't speak. He didn't know what to say. There were whispers all over the congregation. There she is. There's Barbara. I thought she was dead. I thought she was going to die. What's she doing here? And all of a sudden, the whole congregation began to sing Amazing Grace. Can you imagine that wow. Feeling of a person walking down the aisle that was supposed to be dead? And then she, you know, told her story. The next couple of days, she went back to see the physicians that I know that told me the story. They took a tracheostomy tube out. They took all of her tubes out. She was perfectly healed. I spoke with her a few months ago. This was about 30 years ago, and she's married a pastor. She's doing good things in her life. That's just what she intended to do. She wanted to help others because she was helped in a strange and miraculous way, and she's perfectly fine, perfectly healed. And it's an amazing story.
It is. Dr. Kolbaba, thank you so much for sharing these stories with us. And we will put up a link to your website, and that's where people can actually follow with you. And again, they can send their stories of these miraculous moments. PhysiciansUntoldStories.com is the way to check in on that. And will you come back and share with us as your other books are released?
I'd be happy to, Dave. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you very much. And Dr. Kolbaba, do us a favor. Keep Tim in your prayers. And we'll ask that of all of our listeners as actually today, Tim is in for surgery. Tim, you're going in for surgery on this hoof.
I am, yeah.
So this is a good time to ask for prayers again. Keep you in thoughts of prayers. You're going to be laid up for a couple of weeks.
At least.
Yes, right. Yes. And we just want a full and healthy, happy recovery for our Tim Dennis here in Minnesota. So if all of you listening around the world can share that message and share the prayers, whether you believe or not, you know, send good intentions, positive energy, love, light, and prayers to Tim, and let's get him back and running with us. You know, the magic of podcast is Tim will be with us the next couple of days on the show and into next week, and hopefully we'll get him up and healthy again so he's back on the show doing what he needs to do.
There you go.
Sound good, Tim?
Sounds good to me.
So keep a positive light going, Tim. Keep your chin up.
And let me add this. This is a positive step. A lot of people may think that this is a negative step, and it's actually a positive step. What I'm doing is I'm actually getting a flat foot. So I'm moving forward.
Yeah.
I'm moving forward with my life, folks. This is not a bad thing.
Right. And it's all baby steps right now. He's getting better. We just need to keep sending him strength and encouragement and love and light because, you know, doing all the medical issues that Tim's been through, he's kept a pretty good sense of humor about it, but it can wear you down and break you down. And I know that I've seen those cracks from time to time, and he doesn't always share it publicly, but if you can keep him in your thoughts and prayers, folks, that'd be the best way to do it. We'll be back tomorrow when we talk with Shell Taylor about Children of the Paranormal here on the best in paranormal talk radio. You've been listening to Beyond the Darkness.